FM. Song you're listening to right now is The Fire This Time Warriors Dub. It's the Prime Thought meets Manasa mix. You've been listening to Native Solidarity News. It's almost 7 p.m. I've been your host, Courtney, and I've been here in studio with Chris Scott. We heard about a lot of issues today. We're going to follow up on them. We'll also hopefully finish off this story by Sherman Alexie, the tough Indian in the world, next week. So please tune in again and stay tuned for Soul Perspectives.
This is Radio Free Thinkers, your skeptic's guide to the universe.
To get what I'm after till the day I die. To get what I'm after till the day I die. People tend to hate me 'cause I never smile. As I ransack their homes, they wanna shake my hand. Focusing on nowhere, investigating miles. I'm a seeker, I'm a really desperate man.
Hello and welcome to Radio Free Thinker and not The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
I'm not sure what Don was doing there.
Sorry.
Well, nevertheless, we have a great show today. My name is Ethan, you're a free-thinking historian.
I'm Don, your somewhat confused philosopher of political science.
I'm Rob, the cognitive psychologist and amateur ice cream taster.
That's a new one. Well,
I'm skeptical. You look more like a professional ice cream tester.
Oh, I pay them. They don't pay me. Oh. So,
well, let's cover the ice cream section a bit later. Why don't we go to This Week in Science?
So a couple of neat studies have been making headlines recently. One I saw was entitled The Coin Flip, a Fundamentally Unfair Proposition. It's a 31-page analysis published out of Stanford Statistics Department involving physics, mathematics, motion capture cameras, random experimentation, and a device that flips a coin and gets heads 100% of the time. It was a couple of experimenters and statisticians that decided to examine the assumption that a coin flip is perfectly fair and found that in a variety of different analysis that coin flip is pretty much as unfair as you can get in almost every situation. And in fact, even given a perfectly fair coin, perfectly balanced, perfectly weight distributed, perfectly circular, perfectly flipped, there is always a 51% chance that will land facing the same way up as it was when you flipped it.
So if you had it heads and you flipped it, you have a 51% chance of getting heads and a 49% chance of getting tails.
Yeah, and this arises out of pure statistics. You can look up the coin flip study. I'm sure if you Google a coin flip unfair, you'll find it. But basically, if you start with heads, the coin starts heads, it flips over to tails, it flips over to heads again, it flips over to tails, and every time in the sequence, you either have the same number of heads as tails or more heads than tails. So no matter where you stop the sequence, there's going to be a slightly higher percentage of heads than tails, a higher chance of getting heads than tails.
I think you explained it really good before the show when you sat there and you said, you know, let's pretend you're counting numbers instead, right? And you're going counting odds versus even. And you start off with one and then two and then three and then four and then five. And no matter where you stop in that, if you're counting odds, you're always going to have either more odds or the same number of odds and evens.
Yeah, it's the same principle. Depending on where you start counting, you're always going to have either more or equal amount of one or the other. So there's a assumption that we all make that science has shown to be a little false.
How many millions of dollars did they spend on this again?
I don't think they spent too much money.
All they need is like a quarter, though, right?
And someone with a really muscular arm and good...
Yeah. Another assumption that we make is that when we walk in a straight line, and when we think we're walking in a straight line, we're actually walking in a straight line. Well, some researchers out of the Max Planck Institute in Germany flew some people out to the Sahara Desert, plopped them down the middle of it, and told them to walk in a straight line. And they tracked them with GPS, and they found that people had no real difficulty walking a straight line as long as there were fixed clouds or the sun in the sky. When it was overcast, when it was night and they couldn't see the stars, when there was sand up in the atmosphere and they couldn't see, you know, environmental cues, people would start walking in circles. And they did a follow-up study of this where they blindfolded some random subjects and told them to walk in a straight line in a football field. And these people would veer either to the left or the right, there was no particular preference for this, and walk in a circle. And they swore to God they were walking in a straight line. And these circles were pretty tight. I mean, no wider than 20 meters across.
Well, that explains the BC Lions' past performance, but...
And they hypothesize that our sense of straight ahead is influenced by biases in the brain, and environmental cues especially can inform us of what counts as straight ahead. But in the absence of this, that feedback from shifting joints and the motion of our muscles is an inaccurate descriptor of which direction we're moving in.
Or even the idea that in our mind, we think we're perfectly symmetrical. You know, we have our left and right are equal, but in the actual biology, in actual bodies, small little imperfections, maybe your right foot is a little bit longer than your left foot.
This is true. They actually they referenced another study which found a similar circle walking bias when they gave people shoes that had different sized soles, different thicknesses, so that one foot was higher than the other. So,
not related to crop circles or anything, though.
I don't think so.
It's a bunch of people with blindfolds out in the... Yeah, no.
And what of the people with planks, maybe?
Actually, you know, this does remind me of an interesting conversation I had at the Skeptics Pub shindig we had last Tuesday about how our perceptions of things don't always jive with what the reality is.
This is something that I study. This is my area that I look at. And what people think and what people believe... is not exactly reflective of reality in any way.
Well, speaking of not reflecting reality, let's go to an email. And this one comes from our pal Jesse with CFI. He writes, "Hey guys, thought you might be interested in the local issue. These posters have been popping up around Greater Vancouver lately. I found one in North Van, and I've heard of others being found around South Granville area. And these posters, I can't obviously show them on the on radio, but it's a picture of a baby being, you know, stabbed by various vaccines, and it's got the...
It's basically like a porcupine with needles sticking out of
essentially,
it.
Essentially, yeah. And it's basically one of those anti-vax movements that I was very surprised to hear has worked its way up into Canada. But the interesting aspect about these... posters is they're not quite reflecting the standard issue, you know, Jenny McCarthy scare tactics. This is actually
so they're not saying like mercury will, you know, kill your babies, cause autism, or
well, I'm sure they do say stuff like that. I went to the website this poster advocated, and the expert, who apparently is a veterinarian,
Very well qualified to know.
Exactly. Indicates that drug companies are basically evil, faithless corporations hell-bent on waging bioterrorism against the, you know, unsuspecting public.
But we all knew that.
Oh, sure. obviously, this is a kind of a step above Jenny McCarthy and her ilk. This is... people suffering from paranoid delusions. This is like persecution complex mentality. And it's very common in the United States. I haven't seen as much of it in Canada. I've often assumed that...
we tend to be a more moderate society.
Well, that too. I've noticed that our alternative medicine is generally treated as alternative medicine, as in Western medicine might work. This might work too. Maybe it's even touted as sort of like an option if you can't afford or you don't have access. Whereas this poster and what this seems to represent is the idea that science-based medicine is actually trying to kill you, and that you need to wise up and start taking natural medicine, whether that's homeopathy or... I don't know, grass or something. But
this makes me think of our last show where we did a thing about the organic foods or whatever. And one of the things I didn't get across there, I think it's salient for this particular point, is the idea of the evil corporation. And everyone knows I'm far left of center, and I do think corporations are evil. But you don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. I mean, vaccines are science, and science are good. And if you think that the evil corporations are a problem, be it in agriculture, be it in medicine, be it in any aspect of your life, the real thing you need to get at is the idea of regulation and oversight on that, right? I mean, in our
and critical analysis of the reports people are sending out.
No, exactly. But I mean, a lot of this fear of big pharma, this fear of big agriculture, is the fact that a lot of government regulation is written by these corporations. A lot of the control is put in by people who are influencing them, and they're not evil influencing. I mean, a corporation is there to make money, and it's going to do whatever it needs to make money. It's not evil. It's not plotting to kill us all.
It's about as evil as a virus is. Virus is just doing what it naturally does. The thing with, you know, big pharma or all the drug companies, yes, they're trying to make money. And that's, again, what's what they do. But aside from the fact that they're big companies and want to make money, is there any reasonable evidence that they're trying to poison people? No, there is no evidence. There's evidence that they want to make money.
Well, and you pointed out things are a bit better in Canada than the United States. And part of that is we do have a bit stronger regulation framework in here. Canada, it's not a dirty word to say government regulation. And granted, there are some people who worry about the bureaucracy that can rise up around that. But really, the only defense people have against what corporations can do is the government, and the government does that through proper regulation, proper oversight. I mean, having the laws on the book, Mexico has great laws on the books, but they don't actually have people in factories. You know, again, last time we were talking about organic foods, the biggest killer in organic foods or non-organic foods is things like, makes you throw up, but it's a disease, E. coli,
yeah,
right? E. coli, and that's not any evil corporations. It's dirt, and there's not enough oversight. There's not enough inspectors to make sure stuff like that. We had the Listeria thing with
Maple Leaf
recently, right? And again, you know, it'd say, listen, the laws are there. We didn't have anyone looking at it at the time, right?
Yeah, it looks like what this postering campaign and this movement that might be arising in Vancouver is doing is conflating anti-science-based medicine with anti-corporatism and sort of joining them into something that, well, I mean, they're separate issues. They're political issues, but they aren't based so much in evidence.
And the worst thing, I think, along with what Rob, you're just saying, is it's radicalizing the natural medicine movement. It's turning it from, like, we're a healthy alternative. Like, you interviewed naturopaths before.
Yeah,
they're decent people.
They want to help people. They sincerely want to make sure that people are healthy. They believe, from what I heard, and when I talked to the people in the homeopathy clinic, you know, downstairs, that Western-based medicine isn't patient-centered. That it's more about, you know, pushing drugs.
It's more about curing people, you mean?
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's based on a sort of less, I guess, insidious, incorrect assumption than the assumption that Western-based medicine is actually corporate-run and all they want to do is push their drugs and make enough money to survive on their own.
Actually, you know, this represents a good logical fallacy because, I mean, it's really an ad hominem attack. Right, they're sitting there saying, big corporations are bad. Big corporations are in favor of vaccines, therefore vaccines must also be bad. And I mean, if you go by that logic, then money is bad. And if you want to give me your money, please send it in radiofreethinkers@gmail.com.
I don't think people can send money to an email address.
Well,
but I think we have to go to a commercial soon.
Yeah, why don't we do that?
We'll come back and talk a little bit about natural medicine a bit more.
Okay, well, we'll be right back after these messages.
A long time ago, in a city far, far away,
CITR
was born. In the decade ahead, America will be in space.
CITR
is already there. Astronaut Neil Armstrong had this to say about
CITR.
It's one small step for man.
So vote.
CITR, 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Herbert R. Tarlick, Chairman.
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker. I just want to quickly remind our listeners, if you do see any of these posters around, please let us know where and when, and by all means, tear them down.
Yeah, no. If you see stuff like this, right, I mean, it's an act of civil disobedience, maybe, but, I mean, it's propagating things that are dangerous to the community. I mean, we've discussed before about herd immunity and the dangers that the anti-vax movement is, not just to the people who do it themselves, but the community at large. And I think you're quite within your rights. If you see the poster up there, tear it down, throw it in the garbage, collect
it. Or even better, deface it. Or or tack up your own poster with facts.
Exactly. Well, speaking of
facts,
dangerous medicine and medicine advice, Rob, what do you got for us on the WHO?
So the WHO, not the WHO that we were playing this song at the beginning, but World Health Organization, WHO, that's WHO, recently published an announcement. They sent a press release out saying that they make it explicitly clear that homeopathy is not to be used as a preventative or treatment for HIV, tuberculosis, influenza, malaria, or infant diarrhea, and a grab bag of other diseases. And they say, basically, in no uncertain terms, that there is no evidence whatsoever for the efficacy of homeopathy as a treatment for these dangerous diseases. And this is partially, if not completely, due to the work of the Voice of Young Science, Voice of the Sense About Science network in the UK that we interviewed a couple months ago on the show. And they basically compiled a list of studies that showed homeopathy to be ineffective, large-scale studies. They got a whole lot of scientists, you know, biologists, doctors, so on and so forth in the UK and around the world to sign a letter that they sent to the WHO, and the WHO listened, and they sent out this statement saying that homeopathy doesn't work.
Do you think that this statement will have any impact whatsoever on the practice of homeopathy?
No. I know. I hope it would. But, I mean, judging from this poster, you mentioned the radicalization. There'll be a few people who are on the bench, and I hope that's actually a lot of people. But, I mean, they're just going to sit there and say, you got all these listed names. Oh, yes. Well, they're all part of the conspiracy out to get homeopathic medicine.
So I guess we're part of the conspiracy, too, then.
I'm not sure that it's going to change the minds of people that are already well into homeopathy. But when people who are still deciding what kind of treatment to seek see a news story about the WHO, the World Health Organization, saying that homeopathy doesn't work, they're going to think twice before wasting money and time and possibly their life on homeopathic treatment.
And actually, I think one of the big areas, too, is I know in England, and I think it might be here in Canada, too, there are homeopathic hospitals or clinics that you can go to that are funded by the National Health Service. And hopefully, with this kind of research, they'll sit there and say, well, one, unlike other alternative forms of medicine, this one is not only ineffective, it's physically impossible. Right. There is no physically mechanism for it even.
I'm not sure if we've talked about homeopathy recently on the show. So for people who don't know, basically the idea behind homeopathy is that you take something that supposedly causes the same symptoms as the person you're trying to treat has, and you take that thing and dilute it in water a lot. You dilute it so much that it goes past the, you know, a molarity required for it to actually still be present in the water in any significant amount. And then you give this extremely dilute solution, and supposedly it cures them or treats them of whatever is ailing them.
Because apparently they have this mystic property that the water takes on the essence or the energy of the substance. Therefore, it doesn't actually have to be in it. Richard Dawkins did a thing about alternative medicine, and he made the calculation that there'd be one part per all the water on the planet, based upon the standard, was it 1 to 64,000?
It's a ridiculously high number.
It sounds to me, though, that offering such a treatment to someone with AIDS or with malaria is not only not going to work, but it's very morally dubious. It sounds like they're taking advantage of some very sick, very desperate people.
I'm not sure that all homeopaths take advantage of people. I think there are homeopaths that, you know, believe that it works, that they want to treat people with it. It's just that they haven't looked at the science of it. They haven't been critical enough, and neither have their patients, and neither have the people, you know, that set up homeopathy clinics. They haven't been critical of whether it works or not.
You know, there's a funny irony.
There are alternative medicine, and I put that in air quotes, schools. There's even one, I think, on UBC. I mean, I'd like to go there and be like, hi, so you're a school of alternative medicine. What sort of research do you do into homeopathy? I'd like to see the research.
I think there's actually a funny irony in all this, too, is the fact that, you know, the vaccines that are by the evil corporations are actually under much higher degrees of scrutiny and regulation and study than, from what I understand, almost any of the alternative medicine type things, right? I mean, they do studies in them, but, I mean, they're not regulated that well, and the few that are regulated are usually self-regulated, so they make up their own rules.
Well, that's a very good point. And why don't we take a break? And when we come back, why don't we look at another aspect of natural medicine, acupuncture? And we'll be right back after this.
Remember when you first learned about the birds and the bees? Want to learn more about the birds and the bees and the berries, urban agriculture, delicious homegrown food, solar energy, and much more?
1 million remote!
Check out the Society Promoting Environmental Conservation. Come to one of our workshops, join our solar panel tour, or go to our website, www.spec.bc.ca, for more information.
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker.
So, moving on to other alternative medical treatments, acupuncture has been in the news again recently. There was actually an article in the Vancouver Sun about acupuncturists treating obesity, which and a whole bunch of other, you know, the Strait always has stuff on the efficacy of acupuncturists. But this comes out of a study published out of the University of Michigan by a molecular biologist and acupuncturist named Dr. Richard Harris. It's entitled Traditional Chinese Acupuncture and Placebo or Sham Acupuncture.
I love that name.
Are differentiated by their effects on mu opioid receptors. And mu opioid receptors are part of the brain's and the body's sort of natural pain relief system. Mu opioid receptors, when bound to help have a reduction of the sensation of pain. And the hypothesis they were testing was that long-term acupuncture increases mu opioid receptor binding availability. So in the long run, it helps analgesics and your natural pain relief work better than sham acupuncture. So he tested this, and he, you know, and his practitioners of acupuncture and lab assistants put people and gave them acupuncture treatments, either with needles or with the sham needles, and scanned them in a PET scanner. And they actually found, according to them, differences in the activation in the brain. So they found that like some recent studies of acupuncture, sham acupuncture and real acupuncture, quotation unreal, have subjects report the exact same reduction in pain as you would expect, you know, from random, you know, the control of the sham acupuncture, that reduction of the feeling of pain was no better than sham acupuncture. But he says that sham acupuncture and real acupuncture reduce the feeling of pain through different mechanisms. So,
What are the two mechanisms?
The way that the mu opioid receptors become available for binding, and where the activation in the brain happens. So this is interesting. Unfortunately, the study had some very large methodological problems. And I found a long, detailed analysis of this on sciencebasedmedicine.org. And basically, during the PET scan, the real acupuncture group had needles left in, while the sham acupuncture group did not have the needles left in.
I think, too, one of the differences between the sham and the real, just to clarify that, is the real one, you put it in the mystical points of energy, which is how acupuncture is supposed to work in theory, whereas the sham one, they're sort of put in randomly. They're not put in the right
depends.
Places.
It depends on the procedure of the sham acupuncture. Some sham acupuncturists actually use these needles that look like real acupuncture needles, but the needle, after a certain amount of pressure, goes inside the handle. And it, you know, even acupuncturists can't tell whether the needle is real or not. Cool. That's not what this study used. This study used the procedure where they stick it into different locations in the body, and that's already a problem. I mean, if you really want to test whether the placebo effect is happening or not, you need to make sure that both group, your control and your actual, have the exact same characteristics. So, I mean, you should use the same locations on all your subjects in both real and sham situations, but this study didn't do that. But also, they left the real needles in the real patients during the PET scan and took out the fake needles from the other group. So, of course, it's going to register differences.
That would have an impact. Like, does that tip off the patient they've gotten fake treatment?
Well, I think it would do two things. One, it would the patient itself would feel, well, I no longer have the needles in me, so any placebo effect would be gone because I'm no longer in treatment. And second of all, I mean, I don't know about you, but I think my brain chemistry would be different if you actually stuck needles in me than when they're not stuck in me.
Just yeah, so I mean, given the circumstances of the study, it's really unsurprising that the two groups had different patterns of activation in the PET scans because one of them had needles in them at the time and the other didn't. And not only that, but they missed out a crucial, crucial step, double blinding. The practitioners knew that they were either putting the needles in the correct spots or that they were putting them in incorrect spots.
Did they miss out, or did they purposely design the experiment like that so that they could ensure against failure?
That's the question. The question here is whether the fact that, you know, Richard Harris is an acupuncturist as well as a molecular biologist had bearing on the atrocious design of the method of this study.
Well, I think, but one part of the problem, I mean, how do you exactly double blind? I mean, an acupuncturist himself either knows it or not, and you couldn't.
Well, with exactly using those needles.
Fake needles, you're right.
The studies that were done earlier this year and last year that showed that sham and real acupuncture have no differences in how much pain the subject feels were done with these sham needles as opposed to placing them in different locations. And that's how you double blind. I mean, I can't understand why, if they were really trying to find out if, you know, sham acupuncture and real acupuncture had different brain activation properties, they would not have used the exact same procedure.
But this is not new, though, for acupuncture. I've heard of many studies that have been undertaken under very questionable scientific methods simply to get positive results. And they've been panned, by and large, by the skeptical community. I think, though, to very little avail. I think acupuncture, like homeopathy, is one of those entrenched pseudosciences that are going to be very difficult to convince someone that it's not working.
I think, too, I mean, you have in there the idea, I mean, it's ironic that they're trying to use scientific methods to prove their thing, and you got to give them, you know, credit for that.
No, definitely, credit for
the attempt is there, but the misuse of it, and we'll give him credit that he isn't trying to be malicious.
No, I don't think that this is deliberate. I think it's just, you know, when you are testing something that you already believe in, I think you are far less likely to attack it particularly critically, and you're going to miss things like double blinding and.
But I think, even bad methodology, but it also, I think, reinforces why science is better than non-science in the sense that it is self-correcting. I mean, if a bad study goes out there, if a bad research product goes out there, it's not taken as gospel. It's not taken as sacred text as a lot of people. When you start off the show, we had the coin flip. I mean, whoever would have wanted to research that? Well, science is self-correcting. It doesn't take anything for granted, and it goes back, and it says, let's take a look at these old questions again, and let's just use the new methods we've developed to see whether they're right.
And test everything.
Exactly.
Well, we're running out of